Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What are the building blocks of global cuisine? Many Americans were raised to expect meat at the center of every dinner plate. But as vegan Latina blogger, chef, and cookbook author Terry Hope Romero sees it, it is the spices, herbs, vegetables, and grains that, in her words, transform our senses when we eat. And as more and more people embrace plant-based diets for reasons as diverse as the foods they consume, Romero's writing on vegan food has gained a growing following. She joins us now to talk about her philosophy on cooking and eating and about her brand new cookbook, Vegan Eats World. Terry, welcome to Think.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
Very well, thank you. So you start this book with a question, which I love. And the question is, what if the world was vegan?
Yeah, it's sort of my take on this book. This book has a lot of recipes that are not traditionally vegan, but what if they had been created in a world that was vegan, but still sourcing the same ethnic flavor and regional ingredients.
Mm-hmm. And you write that you give yourself permission to sort of bend even from tradition beyond, say, taking out the dairy and taking out the meat. If they work better in a certain way, you will adjust them.
Absolutely. I actually do a little bit of fusion. For instance, I found many parallels in Latin cuisine and Middle Eastern cuisine, and I love to combine certain ingredients from both and the other to create some dishes.
So what would be the benefits for the planet if we stopped consuming animal products?
Well, there are so many, and they're all many of the reasons why people like stop eating meat or just eat less of it. For one, there is just the growing evidence on how all that factory farming of cattle and pigs and chickens just put a huge strain on the environment regarding pollution and the consumption of raw materials. There's the effect on our bodies on how like too much dairy and too much meat and too much of all these animal products are really taking a big toll on our health. And the environment in general as well, and how animals are treated in these facilities.
And can you talk about how you found your way to veganism? Is this something that you've done for years and years and years?
Well, I started out at 16 as a vegetarian, and that was a long time ago before there was an internet to really learn more about how you do that. And it became later on when I moved to New York City in the mid-90s when I met more vegans and just had greater access to a much wider range of places to shop and places to eat that becoming vegan made sense to me.
And it does seem like people at least know what the word means now.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing to see the progress since over the past like 15, 20 years that almost everyone knows what a vegetarian is. But now vegan is becoming less and less of a strange word. People associate it with, wow, it's that more extreme side of vegetarianism. But it's becoming something that is not so strange or foreign anymore.
It's also interesting that, you point out that when people become new vegetarians or vegans, they actually go looking for new and different things to eat, whereas people who've never tried this before assume that it's all about deprivation and cutting out things that you have enjoyed in the past.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing. It's the same story that I hear over and over again when I talk to people who are just eating less meat, is that you go out and look for more. And I think it's part of just the human experience is that we love diversity in our food and flavor. And when you suddenly clear out that center of the plate that's usually taken up by a big hunk of meat, you want to explore. You want to try new things. You want to see what else can I have in there instead.
And the reputation of vegan cuisine is not what it once was, but for anyone who still is under the impression that vegans are people who don't care about how food tastes, it seems like this cookbook really blows that out of the water.
Yeah, it's really just the whole part of the vegan zeitgeist is that there's so many people that just get so amazed when you're like, hey, when you're a vegan, you can bake cupcakes and you can even barbecue. Like all these food and all these different cooking techniques, they don't get eliminated. They're still there. You just use them on different kinds of things.
Are there certain global cuisines that lend themselves particularly well to going entirely vegan?
Well, sure. I mean, there's a lot of Asian food that vegans and vegetarians have been drawing from for a long time. Like Indian has a whole like long-standing vegetarian tradition rather. And there's a lot of things like Thai and Vietnamese and even Japanese that fold well since they focus so much on vegetables and of course tofu. But it's become more more fun and more interesting to see what are these other like traditionally European cuisines and African cuisines. What can we take from those and bring into vegan food?
So one thing I really liked about this cookbook is that it is not full of like, you don't say go to the store and buy some faux meat crumbles or whatever.
Oh, no.
Can you talk about your sort of philosophy when it comes to substitutes for things that, for the role that meat once played in people's diets?
Yeah, absolutely. I really like to focus on whole natural foods. There is tofu and there is tempeh and there is seitan, which is a meat replacement made out of wheat gluten that you can make yourself at home. Those are three traditional foods that have been around for a very long time and now have just gained a wider a sort of acceptance through the growth of vegetarian and vegan cuisine. But yeah, I'm definitely not about, you know, eating the fake hot dogs and the fake chicken and the fake cheese. It's there if you need it, but I don't use them in my recipes, not at all.
So talk about some of your go-to sources for ingredients. How do you make your way, say, through an ethnic market where you may not be familiar with everything that's on the shelves, but you're curious?
Well, I automatically go to where is the bean section?
Hmm.
And kind of work out from there. So almost every culture has some kind of bean that they work with, be it a chickpea or a split pea or like a French lentil. Those are such wonderful building blocks for so many great meals, from soups to dips to pilafs. So just grab those and then work your way out. See, look at the different grains that they eat. Is it teff? Is it bulgur wheat? Is it like black rice? And then you can look at all the spices, and then finally go out to the produce and see what's there that you are familiar with. Almost everyone knows cilantro now, but maybe there's something else like lemongrass that you've never cooked with.
And if you stock up in a place that may be far from home, you take it home and freeze what you're not using right away.
Yeah, definitely. A lot of herbs are really great for freezing. Like lemongrass, as I mentioned before, I automatically, when I bring it home, I just strip out the really dry outer stalks, I chop them fine, and I put them in double plastic bags and stick in the freezer for any time when I want it in a curry paste or in a soup.
So the grain thing seems to be a real revolution of the past, I don't know, 5-10 years. Like it used to be, you know, I remember when quinoa suddenly was everywhere, and now there are more things. You mentioned teff. Some of these items are still tough to find, but they are making their way into certainly the more diverse grocery stores.
Yeah, I was just reading something about that today, how that is one of the booming things you're going to see, one of the projections I see for food in the next year or two, and even in like your better grocery stores, not even necessarily natural food markets, are going to be a wider range of interesting whole grains, things like farro and all these like heirloom rye and wheat and definitely quinoa and amaranth. These are all just amazing foods that have been around forever and were forgotten about and now are just making a big comeback.
Do you find that it takes any more time for you to prepare a meal than a friend who is not a vegan?
Well, I've been doing this for a long time, so I may have a little bit of an unfair advantage, but I don't think so. I think any kind of cooking, regardless of whether or not you're cooking vegan or not, requires a degree of planning, but not too much planning, and just a little bit of setting aside some time to cook. But you can make a great meal in 40 minutes or half an hour or even 15 minutes if you have the right things in the refrigerator.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. If you have a question about vegan cooking or maybe a favorite ingredient or recipe to share, you can also send email to think@kera.org. So let's talk about, you mentioned barbecue earlier. You have a recipe in here, and you don't have to give me every ingredient if it doesn't come to mind, but just talk a little bit about it, for barbecued seitan strips.
Oh, yeah, sure. That is a seitan, which I was talking about, is the meat substitute made from wheat gluten that you can make yourself at home. If you can make bread dough, you can make that. And after I prepare that, I slice it into strips, and the barbecue sauce that it's in is a traditional Chinese-style, sort of those like tangy, long, bright red strips that you see. That usually it's done with pork, and that's a sauce that's made with some sauces that you will find at any big, well-stocked Asian market, such as soy and hoisin sauce, and some ginger and a few other things and 5 spice powders. And it's thick and sweet and really tasty. And you just throw the strips in there and you roast it. And they come out tender and chewy. And they're just really great as an appetizer or just to eat with the vegetables and rice.
When you are baking and you want to be entirely vegan, I think the question that comes to mind for a lot of people is, what about the eggs to sort of bind things together? Talk about the way you can make something like a cupcake without using any kind of animal products.
Well, for the egg problem, there are many different solutions. There's not really just one when it comes to vegan baking. In the instance of making a cupcake, for instance, I don't bother. There's like a powder thing called egg replacer, which is just a bunch of starches thrown together. I don't even bother with that. When it comes to making a simple cupcake, I might just include a little more soy milk or applesauce or banana. Or if I was making a more dense cake, I might use something like a prune puree or even maybe a tiny, tiny bit of tofu. So there are a lot of options to replace the eggs and dairy and baked goods.
If you, say, were to walk into, I don't know how long it's been since you worked like in an office setting, but if you were to walk in and bring something you'd made from home, are people, does it make you roll your eyes and sort of shudder when they say, I can't believe this is vegan, it tastes so good?
I'm used to it by now. I take it as a compliment.
Uh-huh.
Absolutely. And baked goods are a wonderful way to introduce people to the wonderful world of vegan cooking, that you can eat something that's normal and tasty and vegan.
Well, you know, going through this whole cookbook, it strikes me as it's full of things that are tasty even if you're not trying to avoid particular ingredients. And samosas are in here, of course, which you can fill with so many good things. But talk about some of the ways that this recipe sort of lends itself to vegan cooking.
Well, for the samosas in particular, I took I tried to lighten them up a little bit, and I took a shortcut by using not traditional samosa dough, but phyllo dough. So it's a fusion food, as we were talking about before. So those are baked instead of being deep fried, which to me is much faster and easier and less hassle. And the filling itself, besides having the traditional potato and pea, has a lot of, like, you can make your own curry powder to put in there, and toasted cashews, which add just a flavorful, rich, and very satisfying dimension to an already great dish.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go on the phone to James in Dallas. Hi, James.
Good afternoon, ladies. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, great show. I'll take the response off the air. What can you comment about, you know, the theories and ideas that humans are mainly designed as herbivores, or not really designed, we just kind of forced its way in our diet? And maybe you can even comment on raw foodism, as some people kind of take the veganism a step further. And I'll go ahead and take the responses off the air. Thank you.
Thanks for your call. Well, first of all, I should ask, do you think that raw foodism is the next step from veganism, or do you think they're sort of separate things, Terry?
I think they're a little bit of separate things. I think they're parallel. I think there's a lot of interesting things going on in alternative food in general. And I think that, I mean, a lot of foods are already raw. When you eat a salad, that's raw. And I think I like raw food. I find it interesting, and I love raw desserts. I think there's some really exciting things going on in the world of desserts with raw food. But I think as one should not feel like this is the only way, I can only be vegan if I eat raw food, or if I'm vegan, I have to progress to raw foods and stay there. I think incorporating like raw foods into a vegan diet and balancing both together can be a very satisfying combination, rather than feeling like I have to restrict myself to one thing in particular. And what was the other part of the question? It was
whether naturally we are not naturally omnivores, whether we were sort of evolved to be herbivores.
I don't know. If we look at our teeth, we do have the teeth of omnivores. We have tearing teeth and we have grinding teeth, and our stomachs, our guts are designed to digest a lot of things. But there are a lot of things that human beings naturally do that aren't necessarily the best things. And one of the things about eating vegan right now in the world that we live in today, it's looking at what's going on in the environment right now, the strains that our modern lifestyle has put upon the oceans, upon the soil, upon like the growing population of the globe. I think it's important to keep in mind what's happening right now with humans and our civilization, as opposed to what was going on 20,000 years ago.
My guest this hour is chef, blogger, and author Terry Hope Romero. Her new book is called Vegan Eats World. It's a cookbook. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, ask a question, share a vegan recipe, talk about an ingredient, we would love to hear from you. The phone number is 1-800-933-5372. Our email address is think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. Investing in your education can pay big dividends. SMU Certificate Program and Financial Planning could help. You can earn a CFP certificate at SMU starting in January. Details online at cfp.smu.edu.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is chef, blogger, and author Terry Hope Romero. Her blog is veganlatina.com, and her new cookbook is called Vegan Eats World. Join the conversation at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. Terry, I was really excited to open the book and see lots of cool recipes for pickles and preserved lemons and things that really add flavor, so much flavor to a meal that we don't necessarily think about making ourselves.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun to try out. And pickles, I think, are such a hot item right now. And one of the things, though, I did want to do with the pickles that are in the book is that these are not the things that involve intense canning equipment or, you know, a giant pot of boiling water. These are simple pickles you're just going to put in your refrigerator that you can just use a little bit when you need to just liven up a sandwich or a tagine stew or throw in a salad.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go back to the phones now. We have Robin on the line in McKinney. Hi, Robin.
Hi there. My question is, once somebody becomes a vegan, how do they kind of communicate that change to friends and family without creating any kind of conflict, especially if they've never been vegetarian before? I've been vegan for 2.5 years, and it's sort of been a process.
Sort of coming out to the family that you're a vegan.
Exactly.
What do you think, Terry?
Well, I think part of it is to tell them that, hey, you know, this is really important to me, and this is something that if you respect who I am, hopefully the people you're telling this to love you and will be interested in that you're trying to make a big change in your life and say, hey, I could really use your support in this, and that it's really not a big deal. I'm still me. Mm-hmm. I'm still the same exact person, except I just don't eat animal products. And one thing, an important thing Robin mentioned, is that it is a process. Vegan is a process. It's something you'll be doing your entire life, and that not to, like, compare your veganism to somebody else's veganism. Just think about, what can I do? What can I do even every day or every week or every year that's, you know, that's a little bit different or is somehow different from how I ate before?
Do you find that there are people who somehow take it personally, that they're still eating meat and you are not, or they're still eating dairy and you are not?
Something like that, I think, does happen a lot of times, because when someone finds out that you're vegan, and it can happen with a total stranger, they start telling you why they're not vegan, even if you never ask them why or you don't care. They feel compelled to tell you this. So there is something going on, I think, in some people's minds where they automatically feel guilty or embarrassed or somehow bad. Or I don't really know what's going on in their mind, but I think the thing to do is to just realize that just by saying or just by letting people know that you are this, you will kind of start some kind of thought process in their head about what's going on with their diet or their outlook on life.
Do you have strategies for being invited to a dinner party where people may not ask if you're vegan, may not care if you're vegan, and you still want to eat something before you leave?
Well, if that's really the case where you really don't know what you're getting into, the first thing I would do is just say, is it okay if I bring something?
Uh-huh.
And hopefully they're okay with that. I mean, everyone loves it if you bring wine. So why couldn't you just bring like a cool appetizer or a hearty thing to share? So just check with your host or hostess and see how they feel about you bringing something.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak next to Whitney in Dallas. Hi, Whitney.
Hi, I have a question. I'm a vegetarian, and I have a friend who is also a vegetarian, or was up until very recently. She was diagnosed with bipolar disorder, and she's also been seeing a nutritionist. And the nutritionist that she's been working with told her that some of her mental health issues could be stemming from the fact that she doesn't eat meat, and because she's not getting essential amino acids that you can only find in meat and you can't replace with other foods like you can with protein and beans and all of that. And so I was just wondering what the correlation is. And I'm concerned because I am a vegetarian and I don't want, you know, anything negative to stem from that. So,
well, before thank you for your call, Whitney. And before we have Terry answer, we will point out she's not a doctor and you are not, am I correct, a nutritionist. So you certainly talk to what you know, but I don't want to have you give medical advice on the air.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you so much. Yeah, I'm neither of those things. I mean, I do have a little bit of nutritional knowledge, but I'm not a registered dietitian or anything like that. That's the first time I've heard this about someone diagnosing someone with bipolarness, or rather connecting that to diet. But one thing I know for sure is that you can get all those amino acids from foods, from plant-based foods. You need to eat a large range of them, but that's good and that's fine, and you should be doing that anyway to balance your diet.
Mm-hmm. 1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. You can also email think@kera.org. Did you ever struggle, Terry, to get enough fat into your diet?
No, I'm pretty good at that. I like to bake. But one thing I have over the years, I've drifted away from eating fried foods, for instance, and I'm focusing more on getting my fats from nuts, from avocados, from olive oil, from even a little bit of coconut oil, from the good plant fats.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have an email here from Marnie in Missoula, Montana, who says, I'm a longtime vegetarian and I'm new to making my own seitan. I've tried a few different recipes, but was curious if you might recommend the best one in your opinion.
The best one. Well, I do like mine, and there are many ways to make seitan, and it's definitely worth trying a few of them just to see which one suits you best. And traditionally, it's boiled in a big pot of broth, and it makes very good seitan that way, but it is kind of messy, and it is time-consuming. I personally now steam all my seitan, and what I was telling someone before this talk, that if you can make bread dough at home, you can make seitan. And it's even easier because you don't have to bake it and you're not doing any complicated watching in the oven or proofing or anything like that. It's just a lump of dough, like stuff that I wrap in foil and I steam. And you get a perfectly beautiful seitan that you can slice up and you can use in any kind of recipe.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. We have Lisa on the line next in Red Oak. Hi, Lisa.
Hello, how are you?
Great, thank you.
I wanted to call in specifically to let you know that I'm so, so grateful for you offering this type of programming and bringing public awareness to veganism and vegetarianism, so thank you.
Oh, absolutely. Did you also have a question?
Well, I just had a question about, you know, I had heard some of the comments about previous people, you know, attending holiday parties and family functions and things like that, and it's really more of a statement. You know, I've been a vegetarian for over 15 years and part-time vegan for 2 years, but not full-time vegan. And so, you know, I realize that people want to participate in the holidays, and it's difficult when there's lots of ingredients that you don't know. And it's also can be offensive if you're continually asking people what's in this, what's in this, what's in this. And I think it's a great idea just to ask if you can bring something. And once people start to get used to that, I just want to encourage people just to continue to hold to your values. And people, you know, might think you're crazy, might think you're weird. That's okay. They still love you.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you'll just end up sometimes bringing your own food or eating before you go instead of continually, you know, causing a conversation about it.
Thank you so much for your call, Lisa. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, and one thing I wanted to add to that is that what Lisa was talking about, that, you know, people point and asking what's in stuff, is that now more than ever, just the whole awareness of food allergies and gluten intolerances and nut allergies and oil-free and even if is this kosher. I mean, people are getting used to this in general, that I feel that just saying, hey, is this vegan, is just one of the least things you can ask.
You do have some gluten-free recipes in here, but it's not exclusively a gluten-free cookbook.
No, not at all.
Mm-hmm. 1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go next to Lindsay in Dallas. Hey, Lindsay.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call today.
Sure.
I wondered if you could talk about the cost of being vegan. It seems that I've been vegan for a few years, and it seems that my grocery costs are much higher because some of the less common substitutes are much more expensive. So I wondered if you could talk about being a vegan cheaply.
Sure. So it all depends on what you want to eat. Suddenly, I find that a lot of people ask me, now that I'm vegan, I have to buy vegan hot dogs. I'm living nothing off of, like, vegan hot dogs and weird vegan cheese. You don't have to eat any of that stuff to be vegan. You could be eating whole vegetables, like just regular vegetables from the produce area and lots of legumes and, like, homemade beans, which are incredibly cheap, and brown rice, which is cheap. So there's so many foods that you can focus on, and that you should, you can definitely do this within a budget. You don't need to buy super expensive vegan snack foods or any of these other things. A lot of the stuff, if you bake at home, you're already cutting a lot of costs. There's also the question of organic produce as well. Organic produce is important and it's great, but I don't want that to be a barrier for people to consider to eat vegan. You can make all these things with regular produce as well.
There are a lot of cooks who would swear you can't make anything good without butter. Was that an easy one for you to switch away from?
Yeah, I'm just, I don't know, I'm kind of over that one. I think it's a crutch. Mm-hmm. I think if people think they can't make food without butter, then it's more of an excuse than anything else.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next on the phone to Cynthia in Dallas. Hi, Cynthia.
Hi, Chris. Thanks for this great show. I'm a vegan here in Dallas, and one of the things is I have trouble eating out. Like, there's of course a couple of good vegan restaurants in the area, but for the most part, that's not where my friends want to go eat. And I'm just wondering how your guest handles eating vegan out without just being stuck with a baked potato and a salad all the time.
Well, I end up going to a lot of Asian restaurants. That's the default when I don't really want to think too hard about where I'm going to go and call ahead or try to find out what's on the menu. I know if I go to a Japanese place or a Thai place or a Vietnamese place or even a Chinese restaurant, I can probably find something. But there's a lot of flexibility you can find also in Italian restaurants. A lot of vegetables, a lot of pasta without butter but olive oil instead. So I think definitely one of the things that inspired my book was ethnic food, and so many ethnic restaurants offer so much more variety than the more standard traditional American fare.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. We will go next on the phone to John in Neenah, Arkansas. Hi, John.
Hello there. How you doing?
Very well, thank you.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a bed and breakfast in Neenah, Arkansas, and I've had vegans come eat with us, and my normal breakfast at the vegan is vegan, but it's just cereal and soy milk. But we want to serve something to our guests that when it hits the table, they go, wow, mm-hmm. This is fantastic. And I just want to know if your guests had any suggestions about breakfast for vegans.
Thanks.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's so many great options. One thing is scrambled tofu, and that may sound crazy at first, but when done right, and you use a little turmeric, and you put mushrooms and peppers and other things in there, it looks like scrambled eggs. And it's a warm, hot, exciting meal. There's so many great vegan baked goods that you could be making, pancakes and waffles and muffins and scones. A lot of really great brunchy foods are out there. Biscuits, you can make a great gravy using lentils or mushrooms to go with that, so you can have biscuits and gravy. You can still have lots of different kind of potato dishes, just like any kind of hash brown or home fries. There's a lot out there you can definitely do to make a really exciting vegan breakfast.
Your scrambled tofu breakfast that you have in the book, you also include vegan mayonnaise. Talk about that.
Yeah, I have made vegan mayonnaise in the past, but there are many good brands that you can buy out there that are based on tofu or grapeseed oil. It's a pretty common standard ingredient that you can find in a lot of natural food stores and at Whole Foods and a lot of places that just carry a wide variety of groceries.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. We have Karen on the line next in Dallas. Hi, Karen.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to say that I've been a vegan for about 7 years now, and I noticed over the years, say if I'm eating out, especially I like Mexican food, I'll ask if there's chicken broth in the rice or, say, pork in the beans. And I notice a lot of restaurants, the waiters will say no, but when you press further, they really do. They just haven't really checked. So what I know it may sound a little dishonest, but what I'm in the habit of doing is saying, well, could you make sure, because if I don't have Benadryl with me, so... Mm-hmm. I kind of play off like it's an allergy to actually get them to check for sure so that they feel more
accountable,
responsible for letting me know for sure. Because sometimes they'll just say no, but there is chicken broth in the rice and there is pork in the beans.
Have you found that, Terry, as well?
Yeah, I would like to think that's changing, that there are more restaurants that will be just completely upfront and willing to do the extra work to actually find out and let their customers know what is actually in their food. But yeah, like what she's talking about is an old strategy that I knew from a long time ago, is that you pull out the allergy card to really get down to the bottom of what is actually in my food. And oddly enough, because everyone is so uptight about gluten allergies and nut allergies, that can probably get you be really, really effective now, probably more effective than ever, because people are really terrified of lawsuits and things like that. And yeah, I think it's an unfortunate fact of life, but sometimes you actually have to do that.
So we've talked about seitan and tempeh and tofu, but in my book, if you are somehow craving a texture, the texture or the taste of meat, and you don't want to eat it, it seems like the humble mushroom is the most amazing substance on the planet for giving you that sense of kind of almost the mouthfeel of meat.
Yeah, mushrooms are fantastic. There are definitely plenty of them in the book. I just made a soup, a traditional Russian soup that uses sauerkraut as a basis. It's really a hearty, good winter food, and I put a lot of mushrooms in there for that really satisfying, full texture.
Mm-hmm. 1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak to George in Rockwall. Hi, George.
Hi. I'm a doctor, and I'm a biologist for a long time, and I don't understand everything about veganism, but I don't understand how vegans address the essential amino acids that are not available from plant matter.
But you can get them if you eat a diverse range of foods, if you eat fermented foods. And there is the issue of B12, and B12 is something that unfortunately is not in plant food, but a lot of vegans take supplements for that, and it works just fine.
We are speaking this hour with Terry Hope Romero. She is a chef, a blogger at veganlatina.com, and author of the new cookbook, Vegan Eats World. We'll come back to our conversation in a moment. If you'd like to join us, you can call 1-800-933-5372, or you can send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. Investing in your education can pay big dividends. SMU Certificate Program in Financial Planning could help. You can earn a CFP certificate at SMU starting in January. Details online at cfp.smu.edu.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with chef, blogger at veganlatina.com, and author Terry Hope Romero. Her new cookbook is called Vegan Eats World. Join us at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. Let's go next to Frankie in Portland, Oregon. Hi, Frankie.
Hi, how you doing today?
Great, thank you.
Yeah, I would like to know how can someone enjoy the veganism with maintaining low calorie, low carbohydrate meals? Because it seems like everything that tastes so good is high and all that.
All right, low carb, low calorie vegan. Well, I think that the best thing to do is focus on whole foods, to focus on whole grains, all vegetables, fruits, nuts, and to stay away from processed foods, because that's really where you get the most trouble, because you get the overprocessed carbs and all the sugar and usually too much fat in there. So if you maintain a diet that focuses on these whole foods, you'll be able to maintain your weight and feel good doing it.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. We have Billy on the line next in Waxahachie. Hi, Billy.
Hi. a number of my, well, recently all of my vegetarian friends, natural food people trying to really refine their diet, all of them are saying that butter is definitely now being considered preferable to margarine, that margarine is just crap. And I wanted to get your opinion on what margarine. It used to be when I'd go to Whole Foods, they carried one brand of margarine. They said they carried one brand because it was the only one that they could find with less than five ingredients in it. And there were actually just three ingredients in the margarine that they carried for years. Now that's changed too. But anyway, your opinion on margarine or what margarine for a vegan diet?
Well, I mean, butter isn't vegan, so that's not on the table. but using margarine, well, most margarines are really terrible for you, and there's only a few brands that are don't contain any trans fats and are non-hydrogenated, non-hydrogenated. So my solution is I do use margarine, but I use it very sparingly. I use it only for certain baked goods that I make only once in a while. It's not a regular part of my diet. I focus mostly on oils and avocados, really, for a source of fat, and nuts, too, when it comes to putting fat in my diet. But, yeah, margarine's on the sidelines. It's a treat only.
What does it take to learn to work with a solid oil like coconut oil?
It's actually not too hard. I use coconut oil and I use olive oil. To use olive oil as a solid, I just put it in a little plastic container and I freeze it. And I freeze it till it gets that cloudy, like a cloudy, thick texture, kind of like sorbet. And you can cut it into flour if you're making something like a biscuit or a pie dough, just as you would margarine or shortening. And yeah, it works great.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. We have Cynthia on the line now in Grand Prairie. Hi, Cynthia.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Thank you. I have a quick question about, I'm an African-American woman who is a vegetarian, and I love to make my own soul food type of vegetarian meals. I can do wonders with all the different bell peppers, onions, and garlic. However, I'm very busy and I'm on the road a lot, and I cannot find any like soul food, vegetarian, vegan restaurants or meals that, you know, remind me of home or make me happy or satisfy me. It's very, very frustrating because it doesn't exist. I just wanted to get Terry's opinion about maybe locations or things that I could do to, you know, have something with me. I don't know. I'm just frustrated.
Thanks for your call.
Well, you need to get to Atlanta because I was just there about a month ago, and there are wonderful soul food restaurants, like totally vegan ones there. And like I have to admit, I don't know that much about soul food. I mean, I grew up here in the Northeast, and I live in New York City. It's not exactly the soul food capital of the world. But there's some really great things being done down south, and especially Atlanta. And also Brian Terry has a really great vegan soul food book as well. So it's out there. Definitely it's out there. And in D.C. too. D.C. has great, fantastic vegan soul food.
Do you plan ahead at all if you'll be traveling to a city that it maybe is not as big and as diverse in terms of food as New York?
Absolutely. I'm a big nerd. I go online. The internet is fantastic, and I try to find out what's going on, what's there. I think Happy Cow is a very popular site with a lot of people that they track down practically every vegan restaurant and a lot of restaurants that have vegan options that are not vegan themselves, because more and more you'll see that where you can get probably I've had some of my best vegan meals anywhere in restaurants that weren't necessarily vegan, but they do pay attention to and offer vegan meals and vegan solutions.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. We have Caitlin on the line now in Carrollton. Hi, Caitlin.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just had a quick question. I just wondered if your guest had any suggestions on someone who has lived their entire life on a diet with meat. For example, I grew up on a beef farm. We raised cows for beef, and so it's always been a very big part of my life to eat meat. But for someone who's trying to transition, because I notice a lot of times, sometimes I go, you know, weeks without eating meat without even realizing it, and I generally feel better. So I was just curious if the guests had any suggestions for making that kind of lifestyle transition, what the easiest way to start kind of doing that is.
Thanks for your call.
Yeah, well, she's been doing it automatically, which is really cool. I've been wondering, well, what was she making instead? Was she just focusing on more salads? Was she eating more whole grains, more soups? There are a lot of things that I think one of the things to think about when transitioning out of a meat diet is, if you're for eating meat as one, this big large chunk of something in the middle of the plate, how about focusing on dishes and entrees that aren't necessarily about this one large one thing? Pasta dishes, a lot of great rice dishes, soups and stews can contain so many vegetables and have so much texture and variety in there that it's not about eating one big large chunk of something with vegetables on the side. So think about, what are these other fulfilling foods? Stir fries. A lot of things contain meat is never really the focus, but rather a side element. And those kind of foods are very easy to transition to when you want to eat less meat.
What do you hear from people who say, I can do vegetarian, I can't find my way to do vegan? What's the impediment for those people?
Cheese,
really.
Hands down. I 9 out of 10 times people will tell me that they could give up the beef, they could give up the chicken, they could give up the fish, but they can't give up the cheese. And I agree with them. That's kind of a tough one, because there are a lot of vegan, very processed cheese-like things out there that I don't find very appealing. But at home, you can start using things like avocados or different kinds of nuts, and doing a little bit of experimenting, using something like nutritional yeast and other elements to get sort of that salty, tangy fattiness that we all love about cheese. But it can be done, absolutely.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Next on the line is Mark in Dallas. Hi, Mark.
Hi there.
Hi, go right ahead, please.
Hi, I'm calling with a question regarding soya. Recently on television, we eat a lot of soya in our diet, to replace dairy and what have you. But there's been concerns raised that soya being a highly genetically modified crop and hit hard with pesticides and herbicides isn't really that great a food source. So what do you know about that?
Well, I know that there's a lot of negative press about soy. And the one thing about being a vegan is that you are going to eat it regardless. I think almost pretty much every American ends up eating soy in their diet. So one of the things I recommend that if you're transitioning to a vegan or vegetarian diet is to start eating, just don't worry about, I'm not eating enough tofu. Drink instead of soy milk, try out things like almond milk or hemp milk or oat milk. Use things like seitan, or just eat more vegetables and more beans and more grains, because it is a present kind of really like omnipotent part of our diet, American diet. It's going to be there, but there are ways to reduce it. And even if you're not eating meat, you really don't need to focus your diet on tofu and soy.
Why did those become so associated with vegetarian and vegan diets in the first place?
Man, I mean, there's a lot of theories out there. I think partially, my own personal theory is that a lot of vegetarian cuisine that we know today stemmed out of the macrobiotic diet of like the 60s and the 70s. And a lot of that was very heavily influenced by Asian cuisine. And tofu and tempeh are a big part of that. So I think people kind of assume that in order for me to eat healthy, I have to eat in this way, in this kind of Asian-y way with a lot of tofu and soy sauce. So I think that's partially it, because, I mean, there are vegetarian traditions where they don't eat any kind of soy. I mean, look at Indian cuisine.
Mm-hmm. 1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Darren is on the line now in King, Texas. Hi, Darren.
Hi. I just had a little experience I wanted to share. I became vegan here many years ago and vegetarian before that, but when I first became a vegetarian, I went to visit my aunt, my favorite aunt, and in the course of our conversation, I mentioned I was become a vegetarian. She said, "Oh, Aaron, you're not going to stay healthy if you don't eat that meat." And I never thought of this, but just out of the blue, it came to me. I said, "Aunt Mary, and I remember the horses on the farm. They didn't eat any meat. And look how strong they were." She said, I never thought of that.
Yeah, certainly we know it's possible to be healthy. And now it's interesting to see this wave of, and maybe this makes you crazy, but you know, you have a wave of celebrities who are taking on vegan diets. I have to say, love him or hate him politically, Bill Clinton has never looked healthier.
Yeah, I personally don't care. I think it's great if celebrities give the vegan diet more press. Absolutely. Because there's always going to be somebody that's going to relate to a particular celebrity, and they're going to say, wow, if Mike Tyson can do it, I can do it. and especially seeing male celebrities become vegan. I think that's making a huge impact on the perception of what vegans are and what the vegan diet is.
Yeah, it's interesting. It does seem we've moved a little bit in this country off the idea that real men love meat and must have it every day.
Yeah, we have a long way to go with that one, but it is slowly changing, yeah.
1-800-933-5372, our number. We have Samir on the line now in Euless. Hey, Samir.
Yeah, hey, how are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. Go ahead, please.
I just wanted to tell your viewers that there is, looks like there is a misconception that the vegetarian diet doesn't give you proper health. I've been a vegetarian for my entire life. I mean, haven't ate even chicken in my life. And this is pretty common from the place I come from. I'm actually from India. And you'd probably see out there that there are so many Indians out there who are Indians or Asians, I would say, that they're vegetarian and they haven't ate meat in their whole life. So there is, I think, a way to change the habit and change the diet and still be healthy. It's, I guess, just a matter that probably need to find out different places where you can get different types of vegetarian items. Probably I would recommend going to Asian grocery stores where they sell lots of different types of beans and different types of vegetarian groceries. If anybody likes to cook at home, I would highly recommend getting some vegetarian stuff from those grocery stores and cook at home. But just wanted to make a note that it's I guess misconception that being vegan doesn't really mean that you're not being healthy.
Thank you so much for your call. I would imagine, I wonder, Terry, if when you are in an ethnic grocery store somewhere that you're not familiar with, if that's a good place to get recipes as well.
Yeah, I'm one of these people that if I see someone buying something that's kind of neat,
mm-hmm.
I'll be like, what do you make with that?
What is that?
I actually talk to people in grocery stores, but absolutely, they're wonderful places for inspiration.
How do you think vegan cooking is still evolving, and what will the sort of vegan, I don't know if you want to call it a movement, but what will the vegan lifestyle look like in a decade?
Wow, there's so much to say. I mean, to me, I see the impact of technology being part of it. What kind of, even though I talked about how I like to focus on natural foods, I think that there will still be a great interest in developing new and different meat substitutes, hopefully, and animal product substitutes in general, hopefully in a direction where it's actually better for you and healthy and maybe less processed. I hope to see emerging interest in more ancient foods. There is such a boom and a fascination with fermented foods right now and pickled foods.
Mm-hmm.
That's very exciting because when you ferment or pickle a food, you bring out new nutrients that weren't there in the original food. So I think there's going to be a combination of new technology and just old-fashioned food processing techniques that maybe our great-great-grandparents were using.
Terry Hope Romero blogs at veganlatina.com, and she is the author of the new cookbook, Vegan Eats World. Terry, thank you so much for spending this hour with us.
Thank you.
Today's show was engineered by Alan Roberts. Joe Bilotti answers the phones. Christine McConnell produces the podcast. Jeff Whittington is our senior producer. You can learn more about the show, find out about upcoming programs, and download the podcast for free at kera.org/think. And we always welcome your comments, questions, and suggestions. Email those to think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.